Welcome, everyone, to THP Radio. I'm your host, JB, and today we have a new episode of the show sweeping the on-demand talk radio world called The Golf Industry Uncut. Each episode of Uncut will feature one of the brilliant minds from the golf industry, and they will be placed in the hot seat to discuss equipment, technology, and the entire golf industry landscape. Today we are honored to welcome one of the brightest minds in the industry. He's Director of Golf Innovation at True Temper and Project X, Don Brown, to the show. Are you ready to step into the hot seat?
I'm ready.
THP Radio is your new twist on on-demand audio in the world of golf, and the Golf Industry Uncut is your complete access to the equipment world that you are craving the info on. The way the show works is easy. Once the record button is pressed, there's no editing done till the show ends, so you hear it all. The only rule we have is simple. Every guest must be accessible, either on the THP forum or through social media. So before we dive right in, you can reach Don on the THP forum under DBTT, and he's usually there to answer all your questions. So we're going to kick it off with the first question. You've been with True Temper for over a decade, kind of a decade and a half by now. Can you share with the listeners?
A decade and a half on March 19th.
There you go. Can you share with the listeners a little bit about how it started, including your rather unique education, and what got you into shafts and how your career with the company has progressed?
Yeah, so I was working on a PhD, materials engineering, over at UC San Diego. I'd already completed my master's and just kind of realized one day that working on one thing all day, every day for 4 years is really not my speed. I'm much more of a let's do 500 things in one day kind of guy. So put my resume on monster.com back, 15 years ago when that was a thing that people did when they needed to find a job, and got a call from a headhunter. A couple days later, he had me set up an interview at True Temper. Interviewed on a Wednesday or a Monday. I re-interviewed on a Wednesday with some of the guys from the Memphis office. They offered me the job that Wednesday afternoon. I accepted it, of course, and they said, when can you start? And I said, well, how about 8 a.m. tomorrow morning? Because at that time, I had about $100 to my name as a starving graduate student and didn't want to wait to get paid any longer. And they said, well, easy there. Why don't you just come in on Monday? So that was March 19th of 2001. So, yeah, like I said, coming up here next month, I've been here for 15 years.
So you skipped over a little bit of the education part. You have both a degree and a master's degree in rather unique subjects that you don't come across every day. What are those?
Yeah, I have a bachelor's degree in metallurgical engineering, which is basically the study of the science of how you change the chemistry and the processing of metals and its result on the end properties. But while I was doing that at University of Washington, I also took a lot of composites courses on graphite and materials. And being so close to Boeing, there's a lot of influence on that kind of thing in Seattle. So I studied that, and then I realized that's what I wanted to study in grad school. So my master's degree is in just material science and engineering, but with a focus on composite materials.
For our listeners right now, I have an energy drink sitting next to me because keeping up with Don is never an easy thing. He's one of the hardest working guys we know and is always going a mile a minute. We're going to move right into the technology portion. And, you've seen technology and creations change a lot over the years. And part of that is, an education or perceived education of the golfer. Do you think that has helped or hurt the consumer? Their education, and what is the biggest misnomer that a golfer has right now when choosing a shaft for their game?
I mean, I think it's helped in a way that more information is not always a bad thing. I think people can get too wrapped up in, oh, this shaft has these properties or these materials or low torque. And, I think if at the end of the day, it's about with a driver shaft in particular, which is usually where I'm focused, it's about the distance. And so at the end of the day, don't get your head hung up on, well, this shaft has 4 degrees of torque and, I need something lower than that. Or this is what this shaft costs. I think it's whatever shaft fits your swing is generally better. And in terms of misnomer, I would say torque is the most misunderstood thing that most golfers look at. I always refer to it, it's like horsepower. You can get a 400 horsepower car, but if you're just driving to the grocery store to get milk, you probably don't need it. Torque's kind of the same way. If you've got, 100 mile an hour swing speed, and, we're only carrying it 220, 230 off the tee, you don't need 2.7 degrees of torque. That's actually going to make the shaft feel worse than feel better for you.
And this is the internet, so everybody's carrying it 275.
Yes, of course.
We're going to move on to a little something different compared to most of our shows, where we actually took questions from our readers and listeners, and the next three are directly from them. And this kind of falls right back to what you were just talking to. I know you're going to love this one. Let's talk torque. I'm going to roll a couple of THPR questions into one here, but number one, how is torque measured? And going along with that, what type of connection is there between torque and shaft stiffness?
So torque is measured it's a rather simple way. We clamp the shaft at the butt end and the tip end, and then we just apply a weight at the tip end posted off of it vertically. And I can take a picture later that kind of shows that, and I'll post it into the Ask Your Shaft question part on the forum. And we just apply a weight there, and we measure how much the shaft structure twists under that weight. For us, it's 1 foot-pound is what we use here when we're doing that. So we look and see how much the shaft twists under 1 foot-pound, and that number can be anywhere from, 1.5 degrees to, if you wanted to, you can make something at 15 degrees. As it relates to stiffness, they're actually not, although usually you see that the two go hand in hand, the stiffer the shaft, the lower the torque. It doesn't have to be that way. We could make a ladies flex shaft with 2 degrees of torque, or a tour flex shaft that had 10 degrees of torque if we wanted to. They usually just go hand in hand, because usually the higher swing speed players, a lower torque shaft will feel better to them, and the lower swing speed shafts, a higher torque shaft will feel better to them.
And, coupling that with what you said earlier, it is a number that is kind of overthought for most amateur golfers.
Yes, I think it is. I mean, I think people get wrapped around it. Torque should be, when you're looking at the specifications of a shaft, torque would be the last thing you should probably look at. First, you're going to want to look at, does it give you the ball flight conditions that you need? Is it launching and spinning where you're going to maximize your carry or maximize your rollout, or whatever works depending on the conditions you play in? And then how does it feel? How does it weight? How does the swing weight work out in the club? All of those things. And then you should look at torque. But if you've answered the feel question, then the torque question doesn't really need to be answered.
The next question we have is rather interesting, and I enjoyed getting it explained at our THP Handcrafted Experience event last year, and I'm sure it'll be explained again at this one. How do you make a shaft more stiff in a particular section, and how does that decision affect the performance and feel of the shaft? And you can get as technical as you'd like here.
Yeah, so when we make the shaft, it's combined of several what we call flags, pieces of material that go into the shaft, and some of them run the full length of the shaft. Like usually the layers that we control torque with will run the entire length of the shaft, and then there's some layers that will run the entire length of the shaft that basically just control the general flex, is again R, S, X. After that, we go in and we put material wherever we want. We put some flags on the tip. We can put them in the middle. We can put them just in the butt end. We can have some in each location. So we not only can put extra material there, but we can also change how stiff that material is. A lot of you guys have seen MSI on some shafts. It goes from 33 to 125. So you can put a tip flag into a shaft that's 33 MSI and leave that exact same size flag in there, but change it to 125 MSI, and it's going to completely change how that shaft performs. So, with the different materials, we've got a lot of ability to move the stiffness of the shaft around and change the eye profile. And by changing the eye profile, we can change how the shaft flexes, loads, and it launches the ball.
Before we continue, I want to remind everybody that they can discuss these topics and all the topics on the THP forum with thousands of golfers every single day. And of course, you can follow, discuss, debate, and interact with Don on just about anything he's talking about now, right there. He may take a couple of days to get you answered, but he'll always interact and get them answered. You can also follow at Project X Golf and at True Temper Golf to see the content they are putting out, which is as good as anybody in social media is doing right now, right on Twitter. Next question, and you had to expect this one being an internet radio show. The Made 4 OEM shaft versus aftermarket. Since we have someone with us today that can deal directly on the subject, let's discuss. Can you tell our readers the biggest difference? Can you tell them if there is a difference, and what the amateur golfer or the core golfer or even the diehard golfer is going to see?
Yeah, well, I can speak specifically to what we do and what we've done with our OEM partners in the past. I don't have firsthand knowledge of what some of the other shaft companies may be doing, but for us, it's not a quality drop-off. We use the same exact materials in the shafts that we do with our OEM partners that we do in our aftermarket and tour shafts. They're rolled using the same process. We have the same tolerances on them that we do everywhere else. The difference is actually in the shaft performance, usually. Most 95% of golfers shouldn't be playing the shaft that a tour player is using. So it'd be a huge disservice to, 95% of the end-use golfers if we took the same shaft that a tour player was using and put it into their driver that they were buying at retail, because it'd be a horrible golf club for them. So when we design shafts for the aftermarket or for the OEM, rather, we have to change those performance characteristics to make the golf club work better for that golfer.
When you're doing these and changing characteristics, how hard is it to fit the masses? And do you find that you are able to fit a large segment of golfers relatively well, and because every driver hit is slightly different?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, with a lot of, you know, in terms of launch and spin, a lot of it has to do with what the head itself is doing, what the golf ball is doing. But, you know, in terms of where the average golfer needs to be, it's kind of a bell curve. You know, we may not hit everybody exactly in the middle, but a large portion of golfers are going to fall into the category of needing a little more, help with launch and spin, and, you know, a little more torque to make that feel a little bit better. So, you know, like I said, if we gave 95% of golfers the hazardous 83 yellow X, they would absolutely hate it. It wouldn't work for them. So, you know, we don't want to do that to shafts, you know, to clubs coming off the shelf. You know, you'd have people going to the store, buying a club, taking it out, and taking advantage of the 30-day return policy the next day. So that's why the shafts that come off the shelf are different than, you know, some of the tour shafts.
And, you know, going along with that segment, you don't want people picking that up and hating Project X or True Temper or whatever head they're in for that same exact reason.
We don't want it. You know, you do that and people are like, oh, those Project X shafts are too boardy, they're too stiff for me. And, you know, you see that now. You'll see on the forum sometimes people are scared of Project X. You know, they see the name and they associate that, you know, with the original steel shafts, which even in the softer flexes are still for better players. You know, they're still lower launching, lower spinning. So the last thing we want to do is scare people away from the brand.
Exactly right. And I think, you know, the last few shafts and the popularity, and I'll touch on this before we move on, the popularity of, you know, both the handcrafted loading zone line and right now with hazardous is simply staggering.
The hazardous especially is, I mean, I'd say that we're struggling to keep up with the demand right now. We have just our OEM partners for custom shafts are ordering them at a ridiculous pace that we've not seen before for the handcrafted line. And then the tour demand is a lot more. You know, last year, at Pebble Beach, we had 15 shafts in play total, which, you know, is not very many. This year we had 59 shafts in play, and hazardous is now the number one shaft model on the PGA Tour. And when that happens, tour players that aren't playing that shaft see that a lot of other guys are playing it and they start asking for it. So it's kind of the snowball rolling downhill where, as you know, you get more players using it, then there's even more players behind them that want to try it. So we're working two shifts actually to keep up with the demand right now.
Can you explain to our readers the difference? Because hazardous is the line name and there's multiple colors. Can you explain what the difference is for each one of them?
Yeah, so the original hazardous was what we call hazardous black. It's a black shaft with a dark gray logo on it, and that is designed to be a low launch, low spin, and very stable shaft for aggressive swingers. The midsection of that shaft is much stiffer than a traditional golf shaft's midsection, so someone starts very quickly at the top or has an aggressive transition, they're not going to be able to overload hazardous. The yellow has a straight taper profile through the midsection, so a little bit more for a smoother swinger. A lot of popular shafts out there have this straight taper profile. It's not softer per se or higher launching than the black. It just gets to the same low launch, low spin on a different route. So that one's better suited for someone with a smoother transition. It's also a back weighted shaft, so you can either build a longer club or put some extra weight into the head, and then. In the coming months, probably in May, we're going to have hazardous red, which will be black with the word mark hazardous in red. And that's going to be very similar to the black, but with a little bit softer tip. Just get a little more spin on the ball. A lot of guys, especially in the fairway woods, want the ball to land a little bit softer if they're trying to hold a green. And there's just a lot of guys out there who need more spin than the hazardous black provides.
Now, we've been working with you for a long time, and we remember when Hazardous came out, and I remember saying, like, that's the coolest logo I've seen in a long time, actually since the last handcrafted line that I just love so much. When you're designing these things, and I know you have a team that you work with that does this, and, you know, O'Neill is a big part of the process and things like that. Where did the Hazardous come from? Where did that come from?
Well, I mean, that's just, you know, if you would come to our building, it's actually on the front of the door. You know, any building you go into has to have that there, and I just looked at it and I thought it was a really cool way and a really technical way to show the specs that are on the shaft, and it's eye-catching, you know, and it's, you know, there's so many graphite shafts out there, you know, in this marketplace, you need to have something on there that grabs people's attention. So when they see that, you know, hazardous materials logo that they've seen on the back of the semi in front of them when they're driving down the road, it's going to draw their eye, and they go, hey, I've seen that before, what's that about? And they're, you know, going to look for more information or walk over and check the shaft out.
You've mentioned spin with, you know, the hazardous line. Let's talk spin. It's a big marketing number that is put out by every head and shaft company now, and everything appears to be low spin the way it's said. I understand that it, as a number, it's easy to find, but it also changes dramatically from swing to swing for most amateur golfers. How is a low spin shaft made, and how is low spin and high launch achieved, which is considered by most when you're talking about clubs like the Holy Grail?
Yeah, so, I mean, low spin is achieved by either making the shaft, you know, in itself very stiff, but also making the tip section stiffer in relation to the butt. It's kind of a, there's a ratio how stiff, you know, the butt end is to the tip end. And so that's one way we can make a shaft lower spin, is making a very stiff tip shaft. In terms of high launch, low spin, I would say it's more, should be said, higher launch, low spin in relation to other low launch, low spin shafts. There's no pro launch blue shaft out there that's going to increase your launch angle 2 degrees, but keep put your spin at 1700. That golf shaft does not exist. You know, if you, in terms of trying to reach high launch, low spin, you know, what usually we do when we're doing fittings, either with tour players or better players, is we get them in a head that, you know, fits the launch angle they're looking for, and then we use the shaft to try to drive the spin down. But to say that there's a shaft out there that's going to take you from 9 degrees in 2000 to 14 degrees in 1700, that shaft doesn't exist.
Well, I appreciate the candor and always the honesty, and that's, I think, what our readers want most. It's time for our segment called Fire Away. 10 topics, first thing that comes to your mind, nothing about golf. And for those that don't know Don, this will probably be heavily food-influenced because he's a foodie. So first one, you're a San Diego guy, and for obvious reasons, you have to travel to Memphis quite a bit. Who has better food?
San Diego, except for barbecue.
Weirdest meal that you've ever had on a trip to Asia?
Sea cucumbers got to be way up there on the weirdest thing I've ever eaten. The first time I was there, it was 15 years, probably 12 years ago, and everyone in the restaurant hadn't seen an American before, so they were looking at me very oddly, which was weird to me, especially considering there was a crocodile with a price tag stapled to it on the floor that no one seemed to be bothered by at all.
Now, I'm laughing because one of the last trips out, you texted me some pictures of what you were eating, and I turned to my wife and I just said, you would never go to Asia, would you? And she said, no, but you eat some weird stuff out there.
You have to be able to eat things with faces still on them if you're going to go to Asia. That's kind of the rule.
When you're driving to work or driving up to Carlsbad or driving anywhere, are you music or talk radio?
In my older age, I've gone more to talk radio.
Now, this one's going to hit you at home. Would you rather be around Yankees fans or stuck in an airport bathroom?
No, airport bathroom.
For those that don't know, Don's quite the Red Sox fan.
I'll throw out a happy birthday to my baseball nemesis on Hackers Paradise, M. Ward. I hope you get a Red Sox hat for your birthday today.
That is perfect. Favorite movie?
I was watching Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure last night, which is a pretty good one. That might be, I mean, it's not everyone likes it, but it's one that at least sentimentally holds a big spot for me.
Favorite TV show when not watching golf?
I can watch Seinfeld reruns for probably at least 6 to 7 months without stopping.
Are you a road rage guy?
I can get a little road ragey, although again, in my older age, I've been trying to remind myself it doesn't matter if I get home in 40 or 43 minutes.
Best lunch in San Diego?
Oh, that's a tough one. I would say it's usually hard pressed to do better than, I don't often get to eat lunch there, but Hane Sushi in San Diego is probably the best meal in San Diego, and they do serve lunch.
When you get pizza, what are the toppings?
Meat. If it didn't come from an animal, it doesn't belong on a pizza or a hamburger.
I like that one. If you had to leave California, what state are you going to?
Somewhere that touches the Pacific Ocean. There's only probably two cities I've been to east of I-5 that I would consider living in, and that's Chicago and Charleston, South Carolina. But been born and raised in Washington, going to school in Seattle, and living most of my life in San Diego, you'd be hard-pressed to peel me off the West Coast.
There you have it, gang. We want to thank Don for coming on the show and talking to us in this new and unique format. You can join us on the THP forum to discuss and debate everything we talked about here. And of course, follow along on Twitter at THP Golf. Don't forget to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Hacker's Paradise so you never miss a new episode of the Industry Uncut, The Dean Has Spoken, or any of the other THP radio shows. And don't forget to leave a review with your thoughts on iTunes with what your favorite THP radio show is. So for myself and, of course, Don, we hope you enjoyed this new episode of the Golf Industry Uncut. Bye, everybody.